Meeting to order. Let the record reflect it's 8:03 committee time. Let the minutes reflect we have a quorum members present, Representative Olson, Representative Ledoux, Representative Cock, Representative Newman, Representative Salmon. This morning, we're going to start out and take up HB 25, the refund of fish business tax to municipalities. The sponsor, this bill is Representative Seaton, and Wilson is Representative Seaton. You have any additional?
Looks like maybe we'll move to adopt.
Oh, that's right, we do have a CS in here, don't we? We need to adopt first, Mr. Seaton.
Move to adopt 24LS0169/F as a working document.
Hear no objection. CS is adopted. Mr. Seaton, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You do have some letters of support that were distributed to you for the bill, and there's also a couple of other graphs that you also, or charts that you have. Revenue put together a secondary distribution list. It's more aggregated than the first one. I guess the interesting part of this is you can see how this percentage of the fish tax is growing. Again, if I might just reiterate that this bill addresses only the portion of the fisheries business tax that is for fish that are landed in a municipal or borough community and then are exported unprocessed. It does not change the 50% distribution to local governments of the fish tax that is processed inside the state, nor does it affect the fish that come in and are processed probably on a floating processor outside of any municipality. That tax would still be distributed back to, through the Commerce's formula. So the only portion of the tax this identifies is that which is landed in a municipal, in a government area, and is then exported unprocessed. And from the previous breakdown that you were given on a distribution of fish tax, the regions were broken down as southern, southeast, northern, southeast, Kenai Peninsula, Kodiak, Alaska Peninsula, and other. That was based on the estimate of what '05 return will be, and that is the $743,000. And the other chart that you have, the more recent one that breaks it down by west, southwest, south central, Kodiak was the actual for '04, and it was $534. So you can see there is a growth in this. You also have a chart that shows the growth of the program. However, that only goes back to 1999 because there was some corruption in the data disks at IT problems. So unfortunately, we weren't able to go back 10 or 15 years and show what the growth was through the program that way. The other thing that there's been some confusion on was people thought that the formula took this and took the tax that was generated in each of the 14 fisheries management areas and distributed the tax among those within that area. And that's not the way the formula works. What the formula does, it takes all of the tax that is generated across the state and then proportionally allocates that to each of the 14 districts based on the poundage of fish that were processed in the areas. So what we have is not bringing back to the individual area where the fish were landed and the tax generated. What it does, it distributes that to, based on this formula of total poundage that was processed in those communities, so that there's been that. And then within those communities, or within that management area, then there's another formula that distributes, generally it's 50% based on an equal share basis, each community applying, and 50% on population. Or there's a longer form that distributes it based on actual impacts. But the proportion, the what we're working on is the division between the management areas, so that what happens is the tax that's generated in northern southeast would come back to northern southeast. So we take the tax back to where it's generated instead of to where the largest amount of poundage is processed in the state. So, unless there's questions.
We do have somebody from DCED here today, too. Just to answer questions, if any of those, any questions from the membership. Okay. Representative Ledoux.
When the fish isn't processed in a place and it's landed there, I mean, what are the community impacts on it simply being landed?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair. Generally, what we're talking about is we're talking about harbor facilities, we're talking about cranes, we're talking about the, you know, washing facilities, we're talking about everything except, remember, we're talking about Department of Revenue's definition of processing. So fish can come into a community, they're slimed, they're iced, they're boxed, they're, you know, use all, you have the people handling those products, and then they're shipped out, but they're shipped out in a fresh condition. And so if you have troll dress salmon landed in Juneau or Sitka, those leave, and under DOR's definition, those are not processed fish. So anything that's flown out of Sitka that way, anything that halibut that comes into Homer that comes in and is iced and boxed in big fiber totes and goes into a truck and is then trucked down to Canada for processing, you still have the local impacts. You still have to have, you know, the cranes, the toilets, the all those kind of things. However, what happens is the processing is outside of the state. This isn't between communities. If that fish comes into Homer or into Juneau and goes to any place else in the state where it is processed under DOR's definition, that place where it's processed does get the revenue and, you know, get the 50% split. And this is in no way impacting any of that. This only impacts fish that come into the community and then are exported unprocessed. I guess just a couple other examples. Cod. Right now, cod come into Homer and Kodiak and many other ports and are dipped in they come in whole or cotton pots, dipped in a chlorine solution, which fits DEC's definition of processing, are boxed, put some gel packs in, flown out on Korean Airlines over to Korea the next night. And so those fish are a high value of 65 cents, 70 cents instead of 20 cents for cod. But what happens is when you do that, you lose the tax base because then it goes into the formula instead of coming back to the community. However, you've still had the community impact. You've still unloaded the cod. You've still boxed them. You've still dipped them and done those. But the problem is that Department of Revenue's definition of processing is different. And, you know, we've looked in the past at trying to coordinate those definitions, and they are for different purposes, and it just doesn't work to just change the definition. And so this bill strictly identifies those that leave, that landed in a governmental community and are exported unprocessed.
Gabrielle? Representative Ledoux.
One of the problems that I'm having with this bill, as we were talking earlier, is I can't seem to identify which of the communities are going to be gaining and which of the communities are going to be losing, since there seems to only be a finite amount of money. And I guess I've got a concern that some of the smaller communities, they're going to be disproportionately affected, even though some of the larger ones may get a really significant amount of money. for those larger communities, a significant amount of money isn't going to have as much of an impact as on the smaller communities, even losing a smaller amount of money. And that's my whole concern with the bill right now, especially since I can't even figure out in my area which, how much my communities are going to be losing or gaining on this.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, this doesn't really tie to the size of the community, and it's been a real problem for me as well. Department of Revenue, first of all, has not collected the data in a way that they could give it to us by community. And furthermore, unless there are three major processors in a community, confidentiality requirements say that they cannot give us a community-by-community breakdown. However, the one thing that this bill does, it says that taxes that are generated in a community will be shared back to that community. So those communities that are engaging more and more in high-value fresh marketing are the ones that are going to see their tax return to them instead of losing their tax base. Chignik would be probably a good example. Chignik is starting to have a flying out fresh fish. If they fly out troll dress fish and it's, you know, flown all the way outside of the state, they lose that tax. The tax does not go back to Chignik. The tax goes into the general pool and leaves. You'll also see some other communities like on Alaska with the Bering Sea rationalization, which is going to stretch out the crab season. People are anticipating a lot more king crab is going to be flown out live because it's the highest value product. As that happens, they lose the direct tax benefit from that 50%. They are the largest port by poundage in the area, so of course the distribution formula does favor that. So they will get some of it back that way, but they'll lose their direct tax, their direct 50% of the tax that comes back to the place of processing as that goes forward in the future. So what's happened is that our fisheries have kind of grown away from our tax structure. In 1981, the legislature decided that the raw fish tax should be distributed 50% of it back to the local communities where the processing took place. At that time, everything was processed in Alaska. Everything was processed there. We didn't ship out anything fresh. And since then, and in the last few years, we see geoduck duck clams instead of coming in, changing the way that the fishery takes place so the volume doesn't hit all at once and it has to be processed here, the much higher value, triple the value, going out as live geoduck ducks. So what's happening is the fishery has changed into a segment where it's not processed in that community. It may be held in that community for days after the fishermen catch those clams and then ship them out slowly in the round, but since they're unprocessed under Department of Revenue's definition, none of that comes back to the community. So the fisheries are changing, going to more unprocessed fish, higher value for the fishermen, and the whole intent of this bill is just say that if you have a community where the fish are landed and they export those unprocessed, that community will still get the distribution of money because that's where the impacts are. So I wish I could tell you exactly which communities are going to get these back. I can tell you that if a community does not send out any fresh product, then it's not generating that revenue, and so it wouldn't expect to get it back. The communities, I mean, you have your chart there that shows that Southern Southeast, Northern Southeast, Kenai Peninsula, and Kodiak will all get their tax back under this program, so they're all going to be getting more money. Kodiak area, as you would go from 53,777 estimate to 105,512. So the Kodiak area is going to gain that basically $52,000 in tax revenue that it's now losing. And it's losing that revenue because Kodiak area is exporting that much product unprocessed out of the state. generating the tax, but the tax goes into the formula instead of coming back to Kodiak. And I can't tell you which of your communities is engaging in that process. You know that area better than I do, but I have some communities in my district that are going to see increased tax revenues because they're engaging in generating that revenue, and I have some other communities that are not engaging in shipping out fresh product that are going to see some diminished revenue. But again, the whole philosophy of this bill is to share the money back to those communities that are impacted in generating that revenue.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you. I guess I have a couple questions, and I don't know whether or not the bill sponsor wants to answer it or whether the department wants to answer it, but it would be possible, it would seem to me, to know which communities at least have more than three processors, if in fact those are the ones that are is that correct, that now are, I mean, you said that under three they don't get, they're not a part of this, and over three then oh no, it was the information that was coming from them, that was confidentiality stuff. And can you or the department speak to that? And because that would be a way to at least find out, anecdotally at least, what the impacts would be. Is that, or has this already been answered?
Representative Sisson, through the chair. Yeah, we've tried very, very hard to get this, and the best we've come up with is this chart that has regions. Most communities don't have over three significant processors. They may have one or two small ones and a big one, and the problem is that Department of Revenue, under its confidentiality requirements, cannot release that information by a community. So, I mean, you can think of the communities in Homer. You can think of Seward. You can think of, I'm not sure how many are in Kodiak. Kodiak City could probably... you could probably generate that, but all of the others you couldn't. So what Department of Revenue did was gave us the finest discrimination that they could, and that's this chart that is lists Southern Southeast, Northern Southeast, Kenai Peninsula, Kodiak, Alaska Peninsula, and other. And that was as fine as they could do. The later one, we tried to get more. They even aggregated them further. So this is done on... actual numbers and their best guess. You know, of course, they deal with these all the time, so some of this is done on their best estimation, but we weren't able to get those numbers in any meaningful way at all.
And one other question, Mr. Chair, please, and that is, it's my understanding that some communities have recognized this problem and already have a tax, and if that's the case, why not have it done locally? Why not solve the problem locally in those areas that haven't done a fish tax?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would say that, you know, I mean, some areas have sales tax. Anchorage doesn't have a sales tax. The purpose of this bill is to have the purpose of the distribution of processing fisheries business taxes that we established in 1981 that we wanted to share back to the communities that were generating the revenue, generating the impacts that could be identified, share those revenues back to there. And what we've had is a change in which we have we can identify those impacts and those impacted communities, and because of the definition of processing, those revenues are no longer being shared with those communities, because in 81, when this was going forward, we didn't even really have this category of exporting unprocessed. We were saying we want to share back half of the taxes, that was a legislative determination, with the impacted communities. And what we've done is we've now generated a new quirk in the system, because the fisheries have kind of developed away from our original definition. We can identify the communities that generate these taxes. There's no problem doing that. DOR will have another line, another column on its reports from processors that says, you know, where was this landed, on their exported unprocessed form, so that they can distribute that back. This only talks about distributing to local communities, that is, governmental communities, the fish that are landed and exported from their area, unprocessed. So, and when I say exported unprocessed, I don't mean within communities. So if something goes from Kenai to Anchorage and is processed in Anchorage, Anchorage gets the tax distribution. That's the way the formula is for the processed fish. This only deals with that which leaves the state in an unprocessed form. And that's something that is happening more and more and wasn't foreseen, I don't think, in the original tax distribution. And I think that the goal of the tax distribution program of the fisheries business tax, splitting 50% of that with the local communities, was to carry out those impacts and to identify those impacts and offset those impacts. And so we can tell local governments that they should also impose additional fees. Some do, even though they get this impact. Some areas do have severance taxes, sales taxes, and other. That is a different question than does the state want to distribute part of its tax money back to the impacted communities? And should it do it based on where the impacts occur? Because we can identify where these impacts occur. We can identify which communities they are. The fish that are landed outside of a community still goes through DEC distribution, and that's a larger percentage of this tax than that is that's identified from within a community that leaves unprocessed. So this doesn't do away with the distribution under DCED's formula. All it does is say those taxes that are generated within a municipal community that we can identify will be shared back to that municipal community instead of being spread broadly across based on poundages that are processed across the state.
Representative Newman.
Chair, Representative Seaton. The communities that are negatively impacted on the amount of money they receive, do you feel this is a substantial amount of money, or is it $1,000, or is it $5,000, or?
There's a chart in there. Most of them are less than $1,000. Some of them are $72, $27. There are some that are $1,200, and there's a chart in there on the difference in funding that was you were giving, showing the total amount of distributed tax by DCED and the Department of Revenue, and the other columns are the current DCED formula based on the exported tax, the difference, and that last column is the difference. So it ranges quite a bit. Remember that the same amount of tax revenue, this only shows what comes out and isn't distributed. That same amount of money is going to be distributed back to communities based on what communities generate that money. So you only see the negatives, and we can show all the negatives because those are grants from DCED. And they can say, okay, if we didn't have $534,000 from the exported unprocessed, what would that do to the grants? And that's there. The other thing is that within each region just can propose, and Commerce will let them devise the formula of the distribution. Normally, it's 50% based on how many communities apply in the fishery managed region and 50% on population, but they can change that. I mean, if the area, if Kodiak is going to get another $52,000, they can change that formula. So instead of being 50-50, it's 60-40. 60 based on a per equal basis and 40. And so that could mitigate most of the losses. Same with the Kenai Peninsula. Kenai Peninsula, if it's receiving more tax revenue, it could either match those coming from DC, or just ask DCED to, instead of doing 50% on equal share and 50% on population, they could say, let's do a 60-40 split. There's one area that does a 70-30 split. So this is definable within the local areas, and they can mitigate those processes.
In a short form, the communities that are negatively impacted, and Mr. Chair, the ones that are negatively impacted, there is a mechanism in place where they can go to their own local government and mitigate those differences.
That's correct.
Representative Ledoux?
Would that be true of all of the communities which are negatively impacted? For example, if the communities in the Lake Penn area are negatively impacted, would the Lake and Penn borough be receiving more money under this proposal so that the Lake and Penn communities could go to the Lake and Penn borough?
The Alaska Peninsula is an aggregate area. It's not broken down that way. So the entire Alaska Peninsula under this when you take the tax back to the communities that generate the revenue, the Alaska Peninsula aggregate area is going to lose revenue, because under the current distribution formula, with the huge volume of fishery poundage that's generated in Unalaska, Unalaska is getting the taxes that are generated in northern southeast, southern southeast, Kodiak, and Kenai. Those areas generate taxes, and since there's this huge volume, poundage volume that is generated in the Alaska Peninsula, basically on Alaska, there's a tax shift from the areas that generate the revenue and generate the taxes to the largest port. And this changes that. Whether you consider that fair or not is a question. Whether you want to have the revenues go back to where they're generated, if you believe that the fisheries business tax idea, splitting it 50% of the tax to the where it's processed, was a good idea, then I think HB 25 goes well along that line and says these are the identified communities that generate this tax, and that's where it goes back to. So I wish I could tell you that Lake and Penn can change its formula. There still will be taxes distributed under this formula. The majority of the taxes that are distributed under the formula now will still be distributed, and they could change their formula to accentuate the smaller communities if they want.
They're all small communities.
Well, some of it goes to the borough and some of it goes the other, but that's a local decision.
Any other questions from the committee? Thank you, Representative Seaton.
Thank you.
Testimony from the audience. Anybody here to? No volunteers. We do have several people online, so we'll go online here. We'll start with Craig, then Michael Kapnich, and please state your name and who you represent. If you're online, you there?
Yes. Good morning. Do you hear me?
Yes.
My name is Michael Kapnich. I'm a harbor master for City of Craig. The City of Craig would like to express its support for House Bill 25. Craig is a small community located on the west coast of Prince of Wales Island in southeast Alaska. As is true with other coastal communities, commercial fishing is a very important part of our economy. The City of Craig operates three harbors, two docks with available cranes, and an ice house. These facilities are all support for the commercial fishing fleet, both home port and transit vessels operating off the west coast of Prince of Wales Island. We have a harbor department with two full-time employees and an office building that provides public facilities for those using our harbors. We also maintain a harbor response vessel, pumps, and other gear for emergency and routine needs. Over the years, the City of Craig received from the fisheries business tax, over the years, the revenue the city received from the fisheries business tax has been used to purchase equipment and materials for maintenance of our harbor facilities. These revenues have also been used as a match for larger harbor or marine-related projects the city has undertaken. As the fisheries industry has bounced back from recent weakness, we see an increasing amount of fish being shipped out in the round rather than being processed because of demands for quicker delivery and higher quality. While this is good for fishermen and the industry as a whole, it has left the city of Craig and other communities with a decreasing stream of revenue from fisheries business taxes. House Bill 25 reestablishes the important link between fishery landings and revenues received by the communities. This at a time when it is more important than ever for communities to support the industry in their efforts to produce the highest quality product possible. Therefore, the city would again reiterate its support for House Bill 25. Thank you for allowing me the time to address this committee.
Thank you. Any questions? Is there anybody else in Craig to testify?
Not presently, no.
Okay, thank you. We'll go to Lake and Penn. Jeff Courier, state your name and affiliation, if you're there.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Okay, good morning.
My name is Jeff Courier, borough manager, Lake and Peninsula Borough. I really don't have a prepared statement other than you see in this proposal negative impacts on about 100 communities in the state. 69% of the funding that you were talking about shifting through this bill comes from the Alaska Peninsula, $442,000. This comes at a time when most of our communities in the entire borough, and especially those on the peninsula, are reeling from impacts from fisheries, poor returns over the years, and, well, poor prices. I understand the rationale behind the bill. I do not agree with it. To say that fish going through a particular port creates more impact and therefore shifts the burden of the revenue to that port and those facilities is kind of a weak argument, because the peninsula and the communities in the peninsula are totally geared to fish, support the fisheries of all kinds. The rationale that's being used is defendable, I realize, but I certainly do not agree with it, nor do I think any of my constituents will. I'd ask very careful consideration of this bill as it progresses. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Hearing none, go to Onalaska. Chris Ladick, are you there?
Yes, sir. This is Chris Ladick, city manager for the city of Onalaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to speak to House 25 today. I, too, am a little bit confused as to the numbers that are derived from the Department of Revenue, because you can't really see who the winners are in the that spreadsheet, but you can sure see what the losers are, and the city of Onalaska stands to lose $186,000. Obviously, the city of Onalaska is not going to be in favor of the bill. I guess I don't understand the impacts that Representative Seaton is talking about with those communities that don't have the processing facilities and the fish being shipped out. I can understand those communities wanting to capture some sort of taxes for the fish that are driving by or being shipped out of their communities, but at the expense of other communities, I'm not sure I understand that. So I would like to understand better what the impacts are to these communities you're talking about, because our port facilities and our what we have set up for processing of fish and for fish coming through our community is pretty huge, probably per capita. So those are my comments, and again, I know that the mayor and the rest of the city council are going to be against this at this time. Thank you for the time.
Thank you. Any questions? Hearing none, we'll go to Wrangell. Julie Decker, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, state your name and affiliation, please.
Good morning, my name is Julie Decker. I'm the executive director of the Southeast Alaska Regional Fisheries Commission. Live Fisheries Association, or SARFA for short. Our association has been working on the development of the dive fisheries in Southeast Alaska. SARFA supports HB 25, and I would like to address a few things. One of the issues that is coming up is this issue that the market is demanding more and more live and fresh seafood. In our particular industry, the geoduck duck fishery, we've been working very hard over the last 3 or 4 years in order to work with the state Department of Environmental Conservation to allow us to ship more geoduck ducks live. That's where that's what the market wants, that's where the value is. So during this time period, we've increased our shipments of live geoduck ducks to over 90% of our annual quota, and we've increased the accessible value over 300% just by shipping it live. Now the communities in this area, which have supported us in not just verbally, but with dollars for this project, now they're being penalized because the tax from this live seafood is going into a pot and being redistributed throughout the coastal communities in the state. I don't think that that's fair for the communities who have footed the bill for some of this development. It's also these communities have, you know, are giving back, they've been given back their harbors, and now they have to support their harbors. This live and fresh seafood is going through the airports, using the roads, all the infrastructure that the communities have to provide. I believe that what Representative Seaton is proposing in this bill fits the intent of the bill, and as he has described, it's just the marketplace that has changed over the years since the original legislation was passed, and now the original legislation doesn't exactly match what's being done in the fisheries to meet the market demand. That's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions? Hearing none, if there's a Valerie McCandless.
Yes, I'm Valerie McCandless. I'm serving as Mayor of Wrangell, Alaska. I also wish to express support for House Bill 25. Our community is, as many communities in Southeast Alaska, in a transitioning economy. The fishing industry is also making a transition, as Julie described. We're shipping more and more live product from the area, something that would be classified as unprocessed as it would go outside of the community. Yet it is impacting our local community through use of our services, both through our port facilities and our water services and so forth. And it's very important that we as a community capture this tax revenue stream, particularly in light of the fact that we no longer receive a municipal revenue sharing that helps support us as a coastal community. We need to be very in tune to what we are actually generating as the economy. And fishing is an important part of our economy, and so it is critical for us to capture the fair level of taxes for what is really happening in the fishing industry. And so I commend the individuals, both Mr. Seaton and Representative Wilson, for bringing this bill forward, because it is in response to what is really happening in the fishing industry, and it is important that our laws match what is the reality of what is occurring within our state, not addressing something that is archaic and happened in the past. And again, I would like to express both my support and the support of our community for House Bill 25. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Mayor. We have a Bob Jutner online. We don't know where you're at, though. Are you there? Jutner?
Yes.
See your name and affiliation, where you're at.
Sure. Bob Jutner, Administrator of Lucian B. Sparrow, calling from the Anchorage office. And I want to say just one thing. I think all of us in coastal communities share common concerns. We're all dealing with a lot of infrastructure that needs to be there in support of the industry. Having said that, I'd like to point out a couple of key facts. We have one industry. It is commercial fishing. Everything that we do in Aleutian Beach is geared towards support of that industry. And I think it's really important the last person to testify said that the law must match reality. And reality has changed. Market conditions change every year and more so over time. So I would like to offer a few suggestions on this. First, to me, this is a local issue. I think it's important that those of us on the Alaska Peninsula, we tax fish at all levels. We tax it at the borough level, we tax it at the local level. And that is our tax base. It's quick, it's efficient. We know exactly what we have within a few days of the season. We don't get involved in all the problems that you are experiencing trying to get information out of the Department of Revenue. And we have developed ways of checking and making sure that what is collected is being collected equally by the state. The second thing I think that is really important to coming to a conclusion of this is that this project statute was really put in place to tax fish that was not being processed and landed in the state. And I think most of these problems start to disappear when we go back and look at conforming the definitions of what constitutes processing. Once you get into packaging and shipping as part of a processing definition, or dipping it in preservatives such as chlorine, the 3% fisheries business tax gets shared with that community, it comes out of this pot, and it accurately reflects market conditions. Are you going to change this legislation 10 years from now if market conditions change? I would ask the committee to really think long and hard on this as going to a fix that is going to stand the test of time and not just the test of a short change in market conditions. I guess the last thing I'd like to point out or reiterate is that, yes, we do have impact. We build and bond for projects in support of an industry that, in our case, takes about half of the halibut quota and delivers it elsewhere. Most of the 3B quota is delivered into the Kenai Peninsula. But those vessels come out, they use our facilities, and in some cases, they use facilities we really don't want them to use, like our jails. And there are direct impacts. We have harbors, we have cranes, we have forklifts, warehouses, et cetera, et cetera. Some of that is was built based upon what happened years ago, so we're still paying the debt service on that. So again, I'd like to reiterate my final comment, is let's make the law match reality and go for something that is going to be a good fix for this, not just a quick fix. And I'll stick my neck out on the line and say this. For communities that want to get something for nothing, because they don't want to tax the product up front, they're trying to get 1.5% the easy way. Thank you.
Thank you. I see on the paper here there were two people that testified. Is there another person there with you?
Yeah, this is Clark Corbett. I'm the city manager at King Cove. We have exactly the same concerns that Mr. Jettner has just articulated on behalf of the Aleutians East Borough. We have a lot of infrastructure that is impacted by vessels that come in and take fish out without having the fish processed in King Cove. Our port and harbor facilities, water facilities, sewer, other support services like police, EMT, all are used. So there is a major impact in King Cove because of this type of activity, and the loss of revenue that is going to face the city of King Cove if House Bill 25 is passed as it's currently written is going to have a significant impact in King Cove, and it's probably going to have a devastating impact in the communities that are smaller than King Cove, where the revenue they lose is proportionally a much greater part of their annual budget. So all of the communities in this area will be adversely impacted, some of them seriously adversely impacted, if this bill goes through. Thank you very kindly.
Any questions? Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Clark, you said that some of the communities would be seriously affected. How serious do you feel you'd be affected? Were there any financial amounts you know of?
The worksheets we have indicate that places like Cold Bay and Falls Pass are going to lose about half of the revenue that they've had before if House Bill 25 goes through as it is currently written. And in both of those cases, they're already operating right on the edge. They don't have any surplus funds, any fat to cut out.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Is there anybody else online? Anybody from the audience? Hearing none. Members, discussion? Representative Ledoux?
I don't really feel comfortable with this bill without having figures. Now, maybe we can get this. I should have asked the Department of Commerce fellow, and maybe he's still available. But it seems difficult to comprehend that we can't get any more specific figures on who's going to win and who's going to lose and how specific it's going to be. And I just feel, without really knowing how all of the communities are really going to be affected and with this, I would feel remiss on passing this bill out.
Any other discussion? Representative Sisna?
I guess, Mr. Chair, I concur with the Representative Ledoux in that that as explained by the sponsor, it sounds like a very reasonable, good proposal, but I've been hearing before today, and then I've heard more today, that makes me wonder about whether or not we're not talking to enough communities yet, and making sure that maybe there might be a way to mollify those people who are concerned about this right now, and maybe make some kind of fix, as was suggested by the folks from the Aleutians Islands, that there might be something that would actually think about some of the changes. I mean, the fishing industry has changed enormously in the 30 years I've sort of been around, and I don't know what all those changes are because I've only here and there been involved, but at the same time, it's foreseeable that there could be some significant changes, and it would just be good to take the time, not sink it, but just maybe even have a subcommittee working on it or something like that. Thank you.
Any more discussion? Wishes of the committee?
Motion to move CS House Bill 25 CRA version F with accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Motion on the floor.
I'd have to object to that motion.
An objection, so I have to take a vote. Roll call.
Representative Sisna.
Object.
Representative Salmon. Excuse me?
No.
Representative Cott?
No.
Representative Ledoux?
No.
Representative Newman?
Yes.
Chair Olson?
Yes.
Chair Thomas?
Yes.
Representative Newman?
I believe I said yes.
I'm sorry, I thought you meant come back to me.
Okay, motion fails, so the bill will be held. We go to House Bill 69, the reauthorization of Native Family Assistance Grants Program, Sponsor of this bill is the House Rules Committee by request of the governor. Is there anybody from the administration here to present the bill? What'd you do?
Good morning. My name is Catherine Farnham. I'm the Director of the Division of Public Assistance in the Department of Health and Social Services. I'm here to provide you a little bit of background on this bill. Since the public assistance programs may be an area that you're not all familiar with, I'd like to explain the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program. This is a federally funded program matched by state dollars at a maintenance of effort level. It has been revamped significantly with a federal law of welfare reform in 1996. In 1996, the federal law allowed for block grants to states for the monies that go to needy families to provide them cash assistance and benefits into a welfare to work program. And the chart on my left illustrates the success of that block grant program and the welfare reformer initiative. It's seen in many states to be this dramatic, but Alaska in particular has won 3 years of high performance bonus based on our success at employing Alaskans who used to be on welfare. We've seen a reduction since our peak in April 94 of 58% number of cases, number of families who are on welfare and instead self-sufficient, moving towards self-sufficiency and employed. This saves the state $66.1 million in cash benefits. So the block grant program has been very effective in Alaska. The same federal law in 1996 allowed for tribal organizations to begin to run their own community or regionally based tribal TANF programs. And that law has been adopted around the nation. About 37 tribal TANF programs are operating nationwide. Here in Alaska, we have three organizations currently running a tribal TANF program. As I mentioned, the TANF program is in order to provide benefits and services to Alaskans in need. It is federally funded, and there is state maintenance of effort provided with that. Therefore, for the tribal organizations to have a program that is fair and equitable to how the state could run it, it was deemed appropriate by the legislature in 2000 to include a state component to the tribal programs. And this is the Native Family Assistance Program. The Native Family Assistance Program then does allow for state funds to go with the federal funds to tribes to run their own local programs. In 2000, the legislature felt that this was a new territory. We wanted to explore it carefully and established that program with a sunset date of June 30th, 2005, and pilot areas that we would try it out in, not all across the state. Four regions were designated as able to start a tribal TANF program under that original statute, and those are Tanana Chiefs Conference, Tlingit Haida, Association of Village Council Presidents, and Metlakatla. The first three of those have been running programs since around 99 or 2000. The federal law actually allows all 12 of the regional Native nonprofits and Metlakatla to run a tribal TANF program. However, as I mentioned, our state law that allows for these four. That state law also asked for our department to write a report to the legislature on the relative merits and success of tribal TANF program. And I believe that you may have received a copy of our report to the legislature. It highlights the successes of the three programs that have been running and reinforces the same principles that we see in the statewide results, and that is that flexibility and local control, knowing one's families, knowing one's economies, these are the things that make for a stronger, more successful program. And in the end, while we're all seeing great reductions to caseloads and cash benefits in the form of welfare, The tribal organizations are, in fact, doing a better job than the state in these very rural areas where the economic challenges are significant. And so the administration is here in support of making the Native Family Assistance Program permanent in statute and increasing the participation to all 12 regional nonprofits and Metlakatla, thereby matching the federal legislation. I'll mention one more thing and then take any questions. There is a fiscal note with this bill, and it identifies the fiscal note is based on new tribal organizations that have expressed a strong interest in moving towards running their own programs, specifically Cook Inlet Tribal Council. They have been working with the state since about May of 2004 in preparation for a tribal TANF program serving Anchorage area Alaska Native and American Indian residents. And that's a significant population, as you're well aware, and would form one of the nation's largest tribal TANF programs. The fiscal note identifies how funds that currently come to the state from the feds for that population would be reduced. That money would go directly to Cook Inlet, assuming that they start up on July 1, which is their plan, assuming passage of this bill. It also identifies, since the federal block grant for the state would drop, our maintenance of effort level would drop, and that would save general fund monies for the state. And it also illustrates the transfer of funds that we currently spend on those residents in Anchorage, and we would move them to this Native Family Assistance Program. So the nature of the fiscal note is, in essence, the financial changes associated if Cook Inlet comes on board. Two other regions are looking at this seriously and have formally issued their letters to the federal government and the state about a desire to begin sometime in fiscal year 2006, and that's Bristol Bay Native Association as well as Manilik up in the Northwest. So if the bill is passed and extended, we could see potentially six regions with tribal TANF programs by the end of fiscal year 06. Be happy to take any questions.
Representative Salmon.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I have a question on how much the state kick in if you said there was a state match.
At this time, the maintenance of effort level is 75% of the federal block grant.
And how much money is that?
The numbers I'm not sure off the top of my head. I'd have to check on that for you. I think it's...
What's the total then?
Let me see if I can pull my budget up here on TANF. Just a second. I apologize for not having these numbers right on the top of my head. The total, now, and I want to make sure I understand the question, Representative Salmon, through the chair. Is it the amount on cash benefits or the amount of the temporary assistance program as a whole?
Well, the original question is how much the state is kicking in.
Okay. Not finding it. Could I refer that back to you? After doing some staff homework, I'd hate to give you the wrong answer, and my memory is not serving me well.
Other questions? Representative Newman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Was I to understand that this lowers the amount that the money that state is putting in, correct? The state is putting in less money, and are we receiving more federal money back?
Representative Newman, through the chair, this does reduce the maintenance of effort requirement, which is the general fund match, and we, the state, are not going to increase the federal amount we're going to get. We reduce our federal amount if Cook Inlet comes on board because their share moves over to Cook Inlet directly, and I can give you that information. Thanks for your patience. The general fund reduction is a function of the Cook Inlet transfer would be about $2 million. The federal reduction that we would see is $2.8 million, and that $2.8 million effectively goes directly to Cook Inlet in the future. And the answer to the question from Representative Salmon is the maintenance of effort established right now is $41 million. That's the general fund that has to meet the federal. That's the 75%, $41 million.
75% of $40
million? $41 million is the general fund amount.
Okay.
Which is 75% of the federal amount. Our federal amount is roughly $60 million.
Do you have a breakdown on TCC area? Or?
I believe it is in the report, Representative Salmon, through the chair. And
I don't know which report you're talking about. I don't have any. Or maybe I do.
The general fund component, essentially the Native Family Assistance Program, which is general funds to Tananaw chiefs, is $2.4 million on an annual basis. For comparison, Tlingit Haida is about $2.6 million, and AVCP is about $3.7 million. The annual cost of the Native Family Assistance Programs for those three organizations is $8.7 million.
Of state money?
Of state money.
And that's why each of these separate fiscal notes, they total up to the 8 point, there's like four of them in this packet.
The four fiscal notes, Representative Thomas, is a result of different components of money changing. This, for example, taking federal money out of the state and putting it over, taking it completely out because it will be direct from the feds to Cook Inlet. That's one of the notes. Another one of the notes pertains to taking state funds and moving them to the Native Family Assistance Program for Cook Inlet. There's a note pertaining to child support collections that is built into the way some of the TANF programs are funded that will now go to Cook Inlet. And the last component is child care benefits, again, part of this program overall. So those four fiscal notes pertain to those four components. There is actually no fiscal note necessary for the three existing tribal TANF programs, assuming continuation of the bill, because that's already built into the Native Family Assistance Program component. Fiscal note pertains strictly to Cook Inlet.
Representative Sisna.
Thank you very much. So, Mr. Chair, as I understand it, what happens here is that what has been a successful model then gets replicated in these new communities, and it's a savings to the state in terms of the state doesn't do what would have been done by the local entities take over, and so it is a savings. Is there also a savings in this because we're dealing with Native organizations? I know in other ways there's the federal government increases their participation if you're dealing with IHS entities. Does it work on this?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, you're correct in that it is a reduction in funds to the state, but not an increase in the shift to the federal government. The block grant to the Native organizations, the amount is based on the 1994 families that were on welfare, and the exact amount that the state would have received for that block grant is directly passed on to the Native organization on a dollar-for-dollar basis. So the second half of your comment, I'd also say, is correct. The model is to provide as much of a wraparound family-oriented service as possible. And in these very small communities for the tribal families, we have seen evidence that that is better done by the tribal organizations. We are trying our best to improve our services within state government around this more family-oriented approach. However, the tribal organizations have increased flexibility in the way they can invest these funds along with some of their other federal programs.
Any more questions? Representative Ledoux?
So do I understand it that in these communities, the tribal organizations would be delivering all of the welfare services? Would that be correct?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, in the three regions where we currently have tribal TANF programs, the tribal organizations serve all of their families, tribal Native families, where in the Western region, where AVCP operates, that's such a significant portion of this of the population. Association of Village Council Presidents, I apologize. They are actually contracted by the state to serve all Native and non-Native needs in that region, and it's just practical to have a single provider familiar with the region. And so we collaborate in that regard and anticipate the same approach in Bristol Bay. In Cook Inlet, for example, the Cook Inlet Tribal Council will serve the Natives in that area, and not just Cook Inlet shareholders, but all Natives and American Indians. So in some parts of the state, we collaborate and provide referrals, and other parts of the state, the Native organizations provide all the services.
And what about parts of the state that not only have mixed tribal, but there are non-tribal members, period, in those portions of the state? Would the tribal organization in those instances be serving the entire community, or how does that work?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, it would vary by region. As I pointed out, in the western region, in the YK area, the tribal organization is on contract to the state to serve the non-Native residents, and they serve all of their tribal members. So we may do that in some parts of the state where it's practical.
Thank you.
Any more questions? Representative Salmon?
Earlier you were referring to the, Mr. Chairman, thank you. You were referring to the handouts, and I don't have any handout that you're...
We have extra copies of the report to the legislature available. That summarizes the results of the three tribal organizations and our recommendations for extension.
Thank you.
Any more questions? No.
Mr. Chairman. Yes. It's my understanding there are two Native nonprofits that are in the process of being authorized to provide the assistance under the Native Family Assistance Grant. Is that correct? Can you tell us who they are?
Representative Cott, through the chair, at this time there are three Native regional nonprofits in process. The first is Cook Inlet Tribal Council, and we've been working with them cooperatively since May. The other two are Bristol Bay Native Association and Manilik, who we have just begun working with in the last couple of months.
Any more questions? Hearing none, thank you. We have Karen Olson. Do you have your written testimony, or do you want to testify also? Okay. Your name and affiliation for the record.
Good morning. My name is Sharon Olson. I'm the Director of Employment and Training for the Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indians of Alaska, and we serve all of Southeast Alaska. I provided you a testimony that I prepared about a week ago, and I noticed that I needed to say more. And so as many of you probably realize, anytime you write anything, you just keep changing it and changing it and adding. And so now I'm really happy that I have an opportunity to also give an oral testimony. First of all, as I said, Central Council serves the health, education, and employment, human, and public service needs of more than 25,000 tribal members. We have about 4,968 children that are under the age of 18 enrolled in the tribe. Tlingit and Haida's TANF program was the second TANF program in Alaska to be in operation. We have an average of 360 cases per month. Less than 18% of the households served in our two-parent households. We estimate in our TANF, for our TANF program estimates an additional 300 potential clients due to child support who have received benefits in the past and who are also TANF eligible but choose not to apply. And I wanted to stop here for a minute and just add a few more comments to that. And that is, we even though we may see increases in caseloads, we also have measures in place that do not let that get, out of or unbearable. And that is a very effective diversion program. And we also expect one a reason for increases is the fact that we're present in every community in our region. We have field staff and community contacts that are very familiar with our programs and services. So the fact that we now operate TANF and many other services, more tribal people are more likely to participate. We've been able to operate our program with existing funds. There's been no new money or increases at all. We've been able to work within our means. I have today with me Dean George also, who runs the day-to-day operations of our TANF program, and he's sitting here to my left if there's additional questions. I want to go on to say that that it's been a real challenge to operate a TANF program, especially when we have such high unemployment in our region. And in many of our communities, there's very little opportunity for training and for employment, meaningful employment. And so the challenge has always been there. I think it's important for me to comment about the flexibility that the Native programs bring to TANF. We're able to provide a whole variety of service and be very creative in doing that. On the second page, I talk about a fatherhood program, which has been really important to our tribe because many of our fathers of the children that we work with are not present in their lives, and we think it's very important that they become present and also meet their responsibilities in supporting the children. So we've just recently begun a fatherhood initiative where we will reconnect fathers with their children, provide mentorships, education, conferences, and many other types of services that will bring the families together. We also just recently received a two-year planning grant to offer a tribal support unit, which will be in at least a one-year planning phase. We hope to be operational before the 2 years are up. And that is to take on the child support services for our region. And I think it's really important to add this measure into our services. We've been offering a very wholesome program to date, and this would definitely be an important addition. As I said, we're operating out of no new funds. We also have many other administrative capabilities, and I think it's important to note because I'm not sure all of you realize that in Alaska, of the 13 regions in Alaska, There's only one that has not consolidated their U.S. Department of Labor and BIA and Health and Human Services funds into one program, one grant, and one reporting system. And this is really significant because when you consolidate your funds and you're able to manage with more flexibility and less red tape, you're able to do a whole lot more. And this is no more new funds. It's the same funds that we've received that was part of our Indian set-aside. So it's not like, you know, we're able to spend more, but we're just able to do more with what we have. And this was very well noted in a recent OMB report where the Public Law 102477 tribes was rated the highest ever. We rated higher than BLM and all the other programs within the Department of Interior. So this is very significant. I mean, this rating is and it is going to be in the Federal Register, so I can back up everything I'm saying. another important thing is last year, Clinkett and Haida received the Chief's Award from the Department of Labor. And this came to us mostly because of our ability to provide our reports timely and to also provide them thoroughly. And we were able to meet our performance measures. And we also, in Alaska, one of the things that I want to note that I did not include is the fact that Alaska grantees have worked very close together through the Alaska Native Coalition on Employment and Training. And I chair that group. And we meet as often as possible, and we share a lot of best practices and oftentimes come with one voice. So that's another difference in Alaska if you were to compare us to other tribes in the United States. Another additional program at Clinkett and Haida is our Tribal Vocational Rehabilitation Program, which further enhances what we're able to do with TANF families. In a recent study, it indicated that fully one-third of individuals receiving employment-related services from other programs such as TANF have specific learning disabilities. As the Tribal Voc Rehab Program partners more extensively with TANF, the number of individuals with disabilities served by the TVR program is expected to increase. There may be greater adverse impact in achieving and maintaining employment when those associated with poor academic performance. Alaska Native students rank second highest in the states with children with disabilities. These students who cannot pass their exit exam at high school will also be our TANF and TVR clients of tomorrow. So it's really important to continue what we've begun and to continue to work in many of these serious areas. Also, hopefully you've noticed that the Clinkett and Haida has the Vocational Training and Resource Center on Hospital Drive, and there we built the center as our way of preparing for welfare reform. And it offers life skills, office skills, basic computer skills, financial planning, and a lot of other specialized training that we offer to tribal members of all needs. And lastly, I want to recommend that this legislation pass, but I also want to add another comment that is very critical for the state to work directly with our TANF and child support programs and other related programs to ensure that families are receiving the assistance they need and that we can be assured that more families will become self-sufficient with the united effort. And I am open for any questions or needed additional information.
Representative Newman.
Just two quick questions. Is where is your vocational training center located?
Here in Juneau, out on Hospital Drive.
You'll see that. Also, you state there in Alaska, all regions except Manilek are not operating under 477. They've got a pretty.
It's a voluntary program. Well, I know they're going to be very soon. I think they weren't because they're a lot smaller than the other regions. and they have been seeking the approval, and I think that it's going to happen very soon, so all of Alaska will have consolidated.
Any other questions? Representative Cott.
Appreciate all the work you guys are doing. I'm just a little bit curious if you can maybe just expand a touch, not sort of all the committee's time, but on your child enforcement program that will better serve the children by increasing collections. I don't think you're suggesting that the state is, child support agency is decentralizing all of their functions down to your entity, but if they are, that'd be great. But if you can just comment on how you might see that system.
This was a law that just recently passed that allowed tribes in the United States to operate their own child support enforcement programs. And they offered first up to a two-year grant so that tribes can research and you know, prepare to hopefully someday implement a child support program. This is the stage that Tlingit and Haida is in. We are in our first year planning grant. We're meeting with the state next week to review memorandum of agreements that have existed elsewhere and just start the process of whether or not this is going to work for us and would be the best thing to do. So we are in a planning stage. We have a lot of work to do. I don't have all the answers. And, you know, if it turns out that it is something that will enhance what we're doing, then we'll certainly, you know, pursue it further and begin implementation.
So ultimately, then, the current systems, Chair, that is being utilized in the state, as far as what you're attempting to do, could be then decentralized. I mean, you could be performing the functions right now that
very similar to what we're doing with TANF.
Performing.
Yes.
Thus reducing your workload and increasing yours, if it's a perfect match for you, I suppose.
Yeah, and you know, we're working with the same families. A lot of our families are already, you know, involved in child support. So, you know, we're already working with these families. We've got established services in each of our communities. So it seems like the right thing to do.
Any more questions? Hearing none. Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you.
Anybody else in the audience wish to testify? Seeing none, we do have one online that I see. Is there just one?
One, yes.
Molly Merritt Duran, from Cook Inlet Tribal. Are you on?
Yes, I am. Good morning. Hi, my name is Molly Merritt Duran with Cook Inlet Tribal Council, and I'm the Director of Employment and Training Services for Cook Inlet Tribal Council. Cook Inlet Tribal Council is a regional native nonprofit that serves the Anchorage area and the Siri villages. And we have services that are employment and training related, child and family services, substance abuse services, and education for both in-school and out-of-school school youth and adults. Cook Inlet Tribal Council is very interested, we're poised and ready, and would like the opportunity to become a temporary assistance for a tribal family provider. One of the facts that I'd like to bring up is that many of the native nonprofits, such as Cook Inlet Tribal Council, have been vendors for the state, providing case management for welfare to work participants. We've been doing this for over 8 years with an average caseload of anywhere between 600 and 800 participants. So we've been part of the success doing the one side of the program, which is the case management. By becoming Tribal TANF, we will also be doing the eligibility piece, which, as Sharon and Kitty have pointed out, give us a little more flexibility, which we think will enhance our ability to better serve Alaska Natives and American Indians in the Anchorage area, with a further option of offering the opportunity out to the Siri villages as we progress and if they are interested in that opportunity later within our program. As Kitty had mentioned, we've been working quite some time in this process. We've worked very closely with our partners at Association of Village Council Presidents, Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribe, and Tananaw Chiefs. We have learned from their experiences and been encouraged by them through partnership that this is the right thing to do for our people. And they have found that this has been very successful because it adds so much flexibility that's not allowed states through federal legislation, but is allowed to the tribe. We are also a consolidated, as Sharon talked about, what we call 477 providers, so we have that additional flexibility. We, as I say, we've had 8 years of experience. During that time, as Kitty had mentioned, the original 1994 caseload was the kind of demarcation or benchmark for looking at caseloads. The 1994 caseload in Anchorage for Alaska Native and American Indians was 1,123. It is currently, as of November 2004, it was 692. During this same period, Anchorage has experienced a really large influx of Alaska Native and American Indians into the Anchorage area. From the 1999 census, we showed a Native population of 12,000. In the 2000 census, if you look at Alaska Native American Indian and those that identify as other or Alaska Native American Indian mixed with other races, we show a total of 46,000. So we just like to point out that during this period, we were able to help in our role as case managers working with the state to decrease the Alaska Native American Indian caseload by 62% during a time of in-migration. So we just want to point out we've worked very closely with the state and our other partners within the state as the Native nonprofit. And we're ready at a fully integrated one-stop system of social services, employment training, and substance abuse treatment. In addition, as Sharon pointed out, we are many of the nonprofits, the Native nonprofits, are very complex structures, very sophisticated organizations. Cook Inlet as a whole is a provider of accounting services for 39 nonprofits in the community of Anchorage through the 4-acre group. And we have consistently had no financial single audit findings. In addition, we provide IT services for 5 nonprofit Anchorages in the Anchorage area with 25 locations and 413 end users. So I just want to point out we're poised, ready, and able, and experienced, and would like this opportunity.
Thank you. Any questions? Hearing none. Discussion of within the committee? There was nobody else online, right? Okay, thank you. Discussion? Wishes of the committee?
Sounds like a good thing to me, Mr. Chair.
Motion to move the bill?
Motion to move the bill.
Recommendations. Hearing no objections, the bill will be moved. Make sure you sign your sheet before you leave. We are adjourned.